We are both, we both take what I think we have characterized as extreme détentist positions as regard to the growth of the UN budget. We're against it. With regard to duplication and unnecessary replication of functions in the bureaucracy, we both, I think, would like to see an end to unnecessary duplication. We would both like to see some sort of systematic provision for the phasing out of portions of the UN bureaucracy which become superannuated, as it were. I think we both share a concern with the protection of basic elements of the Charter, and that certainly doesn't reflect any sort of conspiracy. I believe that Ambassador Troyanovsky would agree with me that the two of us make very unlikely co-conspirators.
I'm Tony Goodman.
I'm willing to share. Yeah.
Congressman Long came back from El Salvador and said that the army, the Salvadorian forces, are about as effective as a wet noodle, and according to reports. And there have been reports that the soldiers in Salvador fight a sort of 9-to-5 war. It sounds a little bit like early days of Vietnam to some people. How do you, since you've been there and the rest of the administration, propose to go about seeing American aid used if that aid is approved?
I think, first of all, that it's very easy from comfortable luncheon tables in New York or congressional offices in Washington to level harsh criticism at men and women who are, in fact, risking their lives on battlefields, confronting guerrillas using real bullets. And I think the first appropriate U.S. response is a little more respect for the people who are confronted with risking their lives against guerrillas who use real bullets. I don't at all, by the way, mean to reproach Congressman Long with this respect. I don't know anything about what Congressman Long said. And I know that Congressman Long, as a matter of fact, has a rather high regard for the government of El Salvador and its president. Both he and I think, feel that the military forces of El Salvador are perhaps not as well trained to confront the kind of challenge that the country faces as they might be. And that's no surprise. El Salvador has never confronted such a challenge. By the way, neither have we. I think the appropriate response is for the United States to provide more and more adequate training insofar as we are able for dealing with that kind of military challenge.
Yes. Gentlemen.
Mrs. Ambassador, I would like to know if you have any comment with regard to the story this morning in the New York Times about such a good guys. And if you think that's by Tom Wicker, I have nothing to do with that. Well, do you think that, as the story said, that the opportunity is lost for Washington to help to bring about peaceful change in the region?
Yes, no, that column to which you refer was inspired by a question and answer between Barbara Walters and me on David Brinkley Reports yesterday, I guess, Sunday, in which the question was put to me about whether we were supporting the good guys or the bad guys in Central America and in El Salvador, and I responded that we were supporting the democracies against the tyrants. And I thought that meant... I thought the answer was self-evident. The United States has been engaged in an effort to permit the people of Central America to control their own destinies and to encourage them to choose democracy, freedom, and the rule of law. We continue to do that. I think it's an effort in which we can all take pride.
Mr. Halash.
The political scientist. Do you feel that the Hitler diaries are a fake? And if you do, do you think that they are part of a political manipulation to make the position of the United States more difficult in West Germany?
As a scholar, I would not dream of offering an opinion about those Hitler diaries. I think the question of their authenticity is a matter for the experts, a whole battery of experts who possess the relevant expertise, actually. That would include such distinguished historians as the Briton Trevor Roper and the German Dietrich Bracher and others who have worked in great depth on the Hitler period, particularly the last parts of that Hitler period. Second, of handwriting experts and people who are laboratory experts on measuring ages of paper and types of paper and the kinds of handwriting and all sorts of things on which I am not myself expert. I have no doubt, Mr. Halash, however, that there are those in Central Europe today who would, and indeed do, attempt to sow distrust between the United States and its German friends.
Mr. Goodman, I have Ruth Pearson.
Ambassador, I know you've been concerned about democracy in Nicaragua. Is it your opinion that by supporting exiles who are trying to overthrow the government, this democratic process can be improved or can be helped?
I think that what I would like to say to that is that I personally offer all good wishes to all Nicaraguans inside and outside Nicaragua who seek to provide to the Nicaraguan people, who are so long the victim of dictators, the democratic institutions and freedoms and rule of law which they have hoped for and which were promised them by the Sandinistas before they came to power.
Sean Fell, Fairchild Broadcast News. There's a conference in Paris going on right now on Namibia. The five Western powers are supposed to be negotiating. Where do we stand? Is it stalled? What do you see coming up in terms of time for a solution of that sensitive issue?
Frankly, I don't know what you mean the five Western powers are supposed to be negotiating. I don't know whether you're talking about the same five Western powers that comprise the contact group. But if you're talking about those five Western powers, we have been very busily involved, in fact, in negotiations and efforts of all appropriate kinds for many months in the effort to bring about an independent, stable, democratic Namibia, and we will continue that process. We have made considerable progress, I may add.
Mike Moss from NBC. You have been president of the Security Council now for a month, and before you the British ambassador was, and you have conducted a number of extensive consultations on the Secretary General's report dealing with an attempt to make this organization more effective. What sort of progress have you made, and what do you think it will take to make the United Nations, particularly the Security Council, more effective?
Well, I would say, as you know, we, the members of the Security Council, made a decision that those consultations would, like our other informal consultations, be held confidentially until such point as we develop and issue some sort of report. And I think it would be singularly inappropriate for a president of the Security Council under those circumstances to violate that confidence. So I'll have to pass.
Tom Liggett.
Tom Liggett, World Peace News. I'd like to try to put the previous question in another way, in an effort to get at a basic part of the issue. Do you agree that the United States, having been gang raped in the Security Council, was less than wise to have helped set up the United Nations as a back alley forum rather than as an upfront government? If so, what can be done to replace a charter that provides for the possibility of gang rape in the Security Council? In other words, what do you think of the Secretary General's saying that he'd need sovereign authority in order to perform certain vital duties?
Yeah, no comment.
Barbara.
I'll be here. Barbara Truhan, Polish Daily News, Detroit. When will be, when they will be lifting the sanction against Poland? Because those sanctions do not hit the communist regime, but the people. And the communist regime will be very glad, even if half a population will die of starvation. That will be less problem for them. When will be lifted the sanction?
I assure you that the United States has a very deep concern with the well-being of the Polish people, and that that concern is not far from our minds and hearts at any time that we think about policy with regard to Poland. I think that's all.
Don Shannon, Los Angeles Times. Madam Ambassador, with reference to the selection of a sort of a super ambassador for Central America, I assume that you had some input in that. And there seems to be a problem in Central America of perhaps having too many cooks in that kitchen already. And what would a super ambassador be able to do, do you think, in getting to a solution there?
Let me say that everything I know for certain about that, I know through leaks to the American press. So perhaps your question should be addressed to your fellow journalist, Don. I could speculate from what I think I read in the Washington Post, in some sort of composite with the New York Times, and say that my understanding from those two newspapers is that such a special emissary would be specifically charged with trying to make the, to ensure that the elections were as inclusive and as democratic and that as much security for all participants and as much freedom, therefore, as possible were provided.
Mal Good, National Black Network. Madam Ambassador, may I pursue a question a little further that was asked earlier on this situation in El Salvador? Assuming that the $60 million will be granted, and you'll surely have some input as to how much further that confrontation goes, do you have any proposals that would keep us from not thinking about another Vietnam now, but any proposals to offer to the President and to the Secretary of State and other officials of the U.S. government that would keep us from making it next year $100 million, $200 million, and on up the ladder? How will that be resolved that we might stop at the $60 million in resolving this?
Well, I'd like to say two things about that. One is that I find it very odd that Americans accustomed to the continuation of U.S. aid to less developed countries in need, year in and year out, in many cases over decades, in many cases very generous aid amounting to $100 million, $200 million, whatever, year in and year out, should suddenly become so terribly surprised that it should be proposed to continue $20 or $30 or $40 or $50 or $60 million aid to a poor, beleaguered country on our southern rim, as it were, for a few years. That's a very strange thing. Take a look at U.S. aid figures, if you would. Propose to us that we consider this year our last year's aid for whom? Do I dare in a UN context even mention a country to whom the United States has given generous aid over one decade, two decades? Who would like to propose a name? I can think of half a dozen, but I wouldn't dare trust my free association to name one in this context. Second, insofar as I have recommendations to make to the President or the Secretary of State, I don't mean to sound disagreeable, but you may be sure that I have made them.
Pinchas Javits, yesterday was the first day of the second and last week of the meetings of the Committee on the Development and Utilization of New and Renewable Sources of Energy. Now, decreasing the dependence on oil is probably one of the major ways to decrease the need for the kind of assistance that was just mentioned in the answer to the previous question. What is the United States going to propose at this committee meeting? Last week, the U.S. did not yet take any kind of stand at the debate.
I don't know, but I would just like to say that there are a good many countries to whom the United States has provided generous aid before there even was an energy crisis.
Yes,
please. I think I'd better leave that for our experts in this field. We have some at our mission.
My name is Gail Archer of the Gail Archer Show, Group W Television, Cable. I'd like to know what steps are being taken by the Reagan administration to put an end to the apartheid regime in South Africa.
First of all, I'd like to say that the Reagan administration doesn't act on its own. We act as a part of the United States government. What is the United States government doing to try to bring about greater fairness and justice for all races in South Africa? We're doing everything we can think of that's compatible with also the well-being of all the people involved. One of the things we're doing, of course, is observing the UN embargo on arms, which we have done for many years. And another thing we're doing is working with the authors and supporters of the Sullivan Plan and others who seek to encourage greater opportunity for blacks and coloreds and all people in South Africa. And a third thing we're doing is directly in conversations with the South African government, making very clear that we feel that apartheid is an unjust, unfair, and unacceptable way of dealing among people.
I have two questions, Madam Ambassador. One relates to you personally. In a sense, some people perceive you as the Secretary of State on Central American Affairs and charge that you have become so involved with that issue that you are not taking care of other international issues in your capacity as the United States Ambassador to the United Nations. What do you say to that? That's my first question. And my second question regards the Iran-Iraq dispute war. There is an attempt to bring the issue to the Security Council on the basis that it is a threat to peace, international peace and security. Do you favor such premises or such base for bringing the issue here, and exactly how would you propose to deal with that? Thank you.
With regard to your first question, I would simply say that it's very well known that the United States Ambassador, permanent representative of the United Nations, is also a member of the Cabinet, and in my case, of the National Security Council. And we take, therefore, an interest in important questions in United States foreign policy, as well as those questions in U.S. foreign policy which are currently before the United Nations. In order to make certain that the United Nations does not suffer short shrift from this, we maintain in New York 5 full ambassadors. I believe that the United States mission pays very close attention to United Nations affairs. As a matter of fact, if I may say so, I believe I pay very close attention to United Nations affairs and remain abreast of them and well informed about them. And as involves Central America particularly, quite frankly, I think there are a good many people present probably in this room who are aware that I also try to stay abreast and rather deeply involved in important questions of U.S. policy and foreign policy in other areas of the world as well, including Africa, the Middle East, and Western Europe at the current time. The Iran-Iraq war, let me just say there that what we try to do is consult with all the parties directly and immediately involved, including the Arab group and the representatives of the Arab group, the parties to the conflict, and obviously, as members of the Security Council and as representatives of the American government, we support a ceasefire in that region immediately, supervised, verified. And we would deeply, profoundly welcome an end to the dreadful continuing slaughter associated with that terrible war.
Madam Ambassador, I'm from the Turkish Daily News. As you know, the Cyprus question will be debated once again at the General Assembly. Are you supporting the present situation of the Cyprus government position? And what would be your government position in this case?
Wow. That's the most difficult question, yet. I don't have to tell this group of correspondents assembled here that the Cyprus question is an extremely complex one.
which many of whose aspects have been and will be before the various bodies of the United Nations. Let me just say that we are in continuous consultation with the interested parties, and as usual, we will do our very best to support an equitable solution that will maintain at least as high a level peace in the area as is practicable to hope for.
May I share? Madam Ambassador, the German writer Günter Grass compares the situation in Poland, which he with Nicaragua. The Poland is the has the big brother Soviet Union on its neck, and so has Nicaragua, the big brother United States, on its neck. You said on the David Brinkley show, and without quoting you accurately or so, something about, yes, we have to admit there is a success in so far as the Soviet Union is depicted as the lesser threat to the world than the United States, something like that. Why is that so?
Yeah. You know, I'd like to amend Günter Grass's analogy to say that the people of Nicaragua and the people of Poland have the same big brother on their necks. And they are in both cases the Soviet Union, and they are in both cases imposing a tyranny which deprives the people of freedom and the guarantees associated with democracy.
Lily Morgan from IPS. Liv Ullmann, the UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador, suggested this morning in a press conference that United States or other people also should be sending nourishment for children instead of bullets to Latin America, as United States is selling their quota of bullets. What would you comment on that? Or would you agree with that?
I think, one, that the United States is sending a great deal of nourishment for children to Latin America. I would personally like to see us send even more nourishment for children to Latin America, but I'd like to be very clear that in Central America specifically, the United States ratio of economic aid to military aid has been 3-1 in favor of economic aid. We have, you know, the Soviet Union asked Bulgaria to help them decide how they should help Nicaragua at the time that the FSLN came to power there. And a decision was made that the problems in Nicaragua, this was by the Bulgarian Commission, by the way, that Bulgarian connection gets more and more interesting. The Bulgarian Commission recommended that the distribution of aid should be 80-20, military to economic. That's almost exactly the reverse of U.S. aid to the region. When the Soviet-sponsored terrorist international stops sending Libyan planes and PLO flyers and Soviet machine guns and tanks into Central America, then everybody will be free to make sure that all the children are well fed and give that their highest priority. Meanwhile, the United States gives it a very much higher priority than does any other power inside or outside the region.
Last question, Sana Yusuf.
Come here. I'll be happy to share my microphone.
The negotiation on the withdrawal of the Israeli forces from Lebanon had been dragging for a long time, and the stalemate on the negotiation in general about peace had been there for a long, long time. But suddenly we have seen the Secretary of State going to the area after that tragic incident of the bombardment of the American embassy in Beirut. Was that such an event was necessary to bring them more attention from the United States to push ahead and to consider the importance of the issue of time?
Well, actually, that's a very interesting question. I never heard anybody suggest it. I never heard anybody make that connection. I don't think there is such a connection. As a matter of fact, you know, I know there isn't any such connection. It's what's known as, I suppose, a fortuitous circumstance, because I know a bit about the planning for the Secretary of State's trip. I would like to say that we hear a good deal in the United Nations among Arabs about concern for Arabs, and from Palestinians about concern for Palestinians. And I would like to make very clear that we Americans reserve the right to have even perhaps a special concern for Americans' well-being, and we wouldn't apologize for that. But that doesn't happen to be a factor in the planning or timing of the Secretary of State's trip. That trip, at least so far as I know, to the very best of my knowledge, and I think I have some knowledge to the contrary, that trip was inspired by a judgment about how the Secretary of State's time might best be used in the current circumstances. What are the possibilities? Where might he help most? And the decision was made on that basis. We are optimistic about the outcome of that trip.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Kirkpatrick. We shall now have coffee before dispersing. Please. Waiting for a seat.